that he was like, yeah, I feel like stories are like fossils where you have to like uncover them. And I was like, yes. I'm like, yes, the great Stephen King says that like this can be a way to write. This is like a viable thing to do. I was like, okay, screw the plot, screw the outline. Like, I'm going to just write the way that I like to write.
It's You Make Contributiverse. I'm Josh Monk, and children's book author and normal, mild-mannered co-host of this here podcast, joined by, wait, what's that in the sky? It's a bird. It's not a plane. It is actually a bird. It's Betsy Bird. Betsy joins me in the co-host chair today, probably most famous for her previous appearance in the guest chair on this podcast. She is joining me today because Brenna is relieved of her current duties as podcast co-host for this episode only, because she is sitting in the other guest chair today. Here to promote her debut picture book, The Law of Birthdays, out from Cardinal Rule Press on May 1st, 2024. That's this week in 2 days as of recording this, is Brenna. Brenna's going to give us the full download as Betsy and I put our heads together to ask her all of the hard-hitting questions about pants and snacks. I'm really excited for you guys to hear this. Obviously, I'm very excited for The Law of Birthdays to come out this week, and I hope you really enjoy all the yucks we get up to in this conversation. Here is Brenna Jenneret's verse.
Oh, and my gosh. Don't miss standing in my closet with my big recording thing that's still there for show, I guess.
In your closet, yeah, for the people who in my tour closet, your closet. Yeah.
Exactly. Who, yeah. All the hordes of people who come through my closet. Yeah.
Well, how do you record with Kate?
We do it at her place. She's got a whole room for it, carpeted. Oh. It's a little big, but she dinks with it. Her husband's a whole sound guy, and so we have some good equipment for that. So that works out well.
Yeah.
Before Brenna and I, and then we can get into the podcast proper, but before Brenna and I started doing this together, I don't know why he said yes to me, but Jack Foreman, I don't know, Betsy, maybe you know who this is. Jack Foreman of the band Recess Monkey. It's a kid
yeah.
band.
Oh, yeah. He hosts. Yeah. I used to have a guy who reviewed kids' music. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he, up until the last 2 weeks, hosted a show, a daily show on Kids Place Live on Sirius XM. And he had his video on when he agreed to come on the podcast and just talk to me for an hour. Soundproof room, glass, like inside his house, instrument, like an entire wall of instruments. It was very admirable and very sort of. It was clear he was well invested in soundproofing his own home.
So. On the complete flip side of that, I was asked to, it was a really weird situation where a podcast that has, I guess it's called Opposing Viewpoints, will bring in two people to debate something, and then they'll have three news media people. And since it was about book banning, they brought me in. But it was, oh God, what's his name? I blocked his name, but it was this right-wing nut job who started the whole critical race theory thing. I mean, that guy.
Oh boy.
It was him. And he was the worst sound. Like, he literally had a giant fan going, and they were like, can we do something about the fan? And I was like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be a media guy, and you have the worst, he had the worst setup. Could not make him out. And the poor people running the podcast were just like, oh God, why do we have this guy?
Yeah, right. Oh my God, because what a nightmare from the editing standpoint, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, you can't hear anything.
I can't even imagine. They had to stop continually and be like, okay. And he's like, oh, I think there's something on the other wall banging. And they're like, what is going on? How do you not have a tiny room?
And where are you?
Literally like an airplane hangar. And we were like,
oh my God.
Okay.
Sorry, right wing guy. We have to cut your part of the podcast and only feature Betsy's viewpoint.
Oh my God. Right? The one time I got to ask my question and I was totally unprepared. I should have been prepared for him. I asked him a very straightforward question and he just went boo, and I should have reeled him back in, but I was so baffled. I was like, right. These aren't even words that make sense. But yeah, no. Ugh.
I have been part of media trainings, unfortunately, where we've had to instruct people on how to do exactly that, not in a politician way, but in a very answer the question that you want to have been asked, not the question that was
exactly
asked.
That was exactly what he did. Yeah.
Extremely frustrating.
Yeah, and it would have been fine if I just like gathered myself and been like, that's very interesting. Now, if you could answer the question that I just asked you, and then I repeated the question, I should have done that like a second grade teacher, and I didn't. I replayed that 100 times in my brain. Like, oh, why didn't I? Why didn't I just treat him like a child? Oh, well.
Yeah,
totally.
And he was so polite before we started recording. That was the kicker. That was the delightful part.
That's how they get you
beforehand.
They're nice.
And that's how they get you. Three off. Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Well, we're here for a very special conversation where we treat Brenna like a child. No, where we we ask her the same question over and over again until she gives us the answer that we want to hear. No, we're here for I guess I can do the intro. We're here for a very special edition where we flip the script and talk to Brenna. And so to fill in Brenna's seat, virtual co-host chair, we've replaced 1B with another. I shouldn't say that. 1B name with another.
Yeah. There you go.
Start that over. Yeah. We've replaced one co-host with another.
Now I know inviting. How you really feel, Spencer.
Yeah. Wow. Just came out like that. He just said it too.
I
like,
know.
You're right there, and he just
came
said
out
it.
Swinging. Right?
Yikes.
Harsh, right. Man.
Let's start that again. Hi, Betsy.
Hey, hi. That's me. I'm here.
Hello.
I'm the problem. It's me.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I've clearly established myself as the problem already in this conversation.
You're what, the IP, the identified patient? There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. Yes. There you go.
Yeah, welcome, Betsy. We're glad to have you back for in a different capacity this time. So we're going to talk to Brenna about Brenna's forthcoming book, The Law of Birthdays. Welcome. Yay. Welcome to the podcast, Brenna.
Yeah,
thank you. I know I was about to like welcome Betsy, my own self, because Josh,
we'll have none of that.
Other way
none around. Of that today.
I was saying this morning, I'm like, my main fear is that I'm going to like, you know, revert into my like regular like interview.
You could status. Just start asking us questions for random reasons, and we'll have to like reel you back in.
Reel me back in. Yes, exactly. Yes. But anyways, I mean, yeah, I'm so excited that you agreed to do this, Betsy. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Thank you so much. Coming.
Pleasure is entirely mine.
Well, what would you like to introduce us to? I don't know how formal we're going to do this interview. This feels very weird for me to ask you questions too, Brenna. Would you like to introduce us to The Law of Birthdays and how it came to be?
I would love to. Okay, so The Law of Birthdays, my debut book, and it's written by me. Illustrated by Maria Condra. I just wanted to make sure to shout out my illustrator, and then here I go with like who it's written by. It's me. but it, it's coming out May 1st with Cardinal Rule Press, and it started because, a couple years ago, you know, the big overall picture was that, a lot of people, women specifically, were not being given a choice. And I felt really compelled to put that in a book somewhere, somehow. And that's a really big topic. So I wanted to make sure I was, you know, doing it justice and also distilling it down into a really kid-friendly way to get that across. Because I figure, you know, if at the top with parents and adults and all the stuff, if we're not getting a choice and that trickles down and kids aren't also getting a choice, we're just going to raise more people who aren't getting choices, you know, and it's just a vicious cycle. So anyways, my thought was most people like cake. Everyone has a birthday. Let's start there. So that's where I started. And also, I personally don't have a sweet tooth. I've talked about this before on the podcast. So I actually don't really like cake. I prefer French fries. I prefer salty things. So that was sort of the hook. Like, this girl is at this king's birthday party. The law of birthdays in the kingdom is that you must eat cake if it's a birthday. And this girl is like, I don't want cake. And so the king is a real dum-dum, and the girl stands her ground. I really like the idea of having a flat arc and having the girl sort of like be really stubborn and the king have to try to like, you know, understand what she's saying because he just isn't getting it. And so that's how it was born. And I tend to write in a lot of dialogue. So it came out in a lot of dialogue. So it's all dialogue, but it's not a graphic novel. It's a fiction book. So that's where it came from.
Very cool. I like a lot of dialogue myself. You have just destroyed one of my questions, which was going to be, what's your favorite kind of cake? So that one's gone.
French fry cake.
I have to knock that one. French fry cake. Oh my God. If someone hasn't made a book about that, quick. jump on that. Yeah, no, I love all that. I actually I have a question myself. So kids and this whole idea of choice with kids. Kids have very few choices that they are allowed to make. I mean, they literally have to ask to use the bathroom. So, right. You know, choices, the one area where they are able to exert their will, and there's only so much a parent can do, is in eating. Eat that, no, and then we proceed from there. So that, it seemed to be very clever that you would use that as the method by which the kid is establishing their choice, because that's sometimes the only way a kid can establish what they will or will not do is through the act of eating. You still got to breathe. You still got to sleep. I mean, you can resist bedtime, but at a certain point, your body just... But a kid can just not eat for quite some time, as I think we've all learned. So was that in your mind at all when you were coming up with the idea?
Totally. I mean, I live with a 7-year-old who is very stubborn and very, oh my gosh. And guys, I can't even tell you, the new bedtime routine that we have going on is maddening. It's maddening. So we start at 6, right? He doesn't go to sleep until 9. So this is why.
Oh,
so
no.
He go, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Random. Listen to this.
Very
so,
familiar to me.
So
actually.
First of yeah. all, yeah. So first of all, I'm vegan. So is my kid. So that's number one, right? So getting enough calories in him to begin with is like hard. Also, he eats like a squirrel. So that is also hard. So it's like a steady drip, right? All day. Like he doesn't eat meals. He just like steadily like chews. So the other piece of the puzzle
steadily,
here.
I'm sorry. He steadily chews.
Basically, because he like eats a lot of like apples, yeah, carrots. So it, you know, it takes a lot to digest, right? So right. Anyways, so the main issue that has come to light is that he is also turned into this like vivacious reader, which is amazing. He loves Dog Man, loves it. We bought him the box set. He's reading them like over and over and over and over again. So it's amazing. So part of me is like, I can't really complain that much, except for I am. I'm complaining a lot because it is like so disruptive to our nighttime. But he will come upstairs to go to bed and he will read 2 Dogmans every night and then beg for a third one. So he's mm-hmm. up here reading for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. The kid gets hungry, right? So I get that. He's hungry. But then he's like, Mama, I finished my first book. Can I read my second one? Mama, I have to go potty. Mama, I'm hungry. Mama, can I come? Like, that's not enough food. Like, can I come downstairs? Because we'll bring up apples and carrots and whatever. And he'll eat that. But then he's like still hungry. Anyways. Yes, Betsy, to answer your question. It was in my brain. Like so much in my brain.
Yeah. A little bit in your brain.
Because he just, yeah, it's impossible to like fill him up. And then you're right. At some point, he will just pass out. And then like he can't, you know, he's not eating anymore because he's so exhausted. And I'm like, okay.
I mean, not eating.
Yes. So yes, definitely in my brain.
This wasn't, it hasn't been like this since the inception of Law of Birthdays, though, I'm hoping, because that's been a couple of years now.
Yeah, right. So the inception of the Law of Birthdays was like 2021, 2022, maybe, because it was like a year and a half from like final edits to like actually, you know, coming full circle and being published, because Cardinal Rule is on like such an expedited path for publication because they're so small. And they only do 4 to 6 titles every year. So, so it was pretty quick. And my kid also used to be what I call an alpine riser, because he would wake up at like 2 a.m. ready to go.
That was like
a 6-month stretch of just 2 a.m. My husband and I would switch off. We take naps halfway through the day. It was rough. It was really rough. Eating has always been an issue, but not the bedtime part so much. So yeah.
For sure. What is the alpine? What is that meant to indicate? Like people get up to ski or mountain climb?
Yeah, an alpine start. An alpine start is a really early morning start in the mountains, and you want to get up early, especially in the mountains if you're doing like big climbs. Because you want it, like if there's ice climbing involved, you want to get up there before stuff starts to thaw. So it's an alpine start. Yeah. So that's what we were doing with my kid, alpine start. But nothing so rad as climbing mountains. No, it was just like sitting in the kitchen, like trying to stay awake. So yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good answer.
A lot to say about it. Yeah.
To what extent does Finn have control over what he eats? I mean, you said he's a grazer, but how does that play out for you guys in real life?
So we have actually tried to give him like a ton of autonomy over his food and the choices of food that he eats. So we've actually designated like a full drawer to like just his food. Like I put all kinds of stuff in there that he just has access to whenever. So the stuff in the fridge is becoming more accessible to him only because he's gotten taller. So right, like that, you know, like we weren't trying to keep it from him. He just like couldn't open the fridge himself. So yeah, so like his, you know, crackers and like peanut butter pretzels and just, you know, like whatever endless amount of like nuts and like, you know, stuff. So he, so in that regard, he has a lot of, he has a lot of say over what he eats.
Yeah. Mental images, just a pullout drawer filled with what is essentially a trail mix.
Basically
just grab a handful and go.
It's just, yeah, like falling out at the seams. It just is overflowing with it. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, easy stuff like pretzels and whatever. But yeah, we've done that since he was a kid, since he was little. Like I took out all the pots and pans at our old house and like the cupboard underneath the sink or whatever. And that was all like stuff for him that he could just access so that it wasn't such a big deal and he could just eat whenever he wanted. So yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I also have a drawer that my like things my son can just go to and get that. But he doesn't graze. He gets it like one time a day. He knows where to go.
Yeah,
his taste changed though. It's amazing. It's like now he's on a saltines kick. I'm like, really, saltines?
Dude, really? My kid too. My kid too.
I don't get it.
Let me ask you this: is he also a saltine like connoisseur? Because my kid can tell if I got them from Sticks or Whole Foods.
I got
like
cheap, junky saltines. He didn't care squat. I was like, these were like, you know when you don't get the Cheerios, but you get like the Circle O's or whatever. Like this is the saltine version of that.
Yes.
And he didn't care. He's like, oh, the box is bigger. I'm like, yeah. Because I'm sorry. All these Clancy's.
Yeah.
That was my working theory, was that there could be no such thing as a saltine connoisseur because saltines have no taste aside from salt and cracker.
Yep. Right. Right. So
and it's not even a good cracker.
Right.
Like
no,
hardtack. Basically, it's hardtack.
It's basically
really
cardboard.
Thin hardtack. Yeah.
With salt.
Yeah.
No, the
no
salt
weevils in it. We're
the,
good. Yeah.
The salt is the only thing that can be like, you know, regulated on there. That's the only difference. And Whole Foods saltines is the only ones that he'll eat now.
Oh, because I'm never getting my son that.
The
then.
Most
bougie,
bottom shelf saltine bulk. Yeah.
It's,
you don't
it's
care, but I'm like,
ridiculous.
This is what you eat when you're sick and you're trying to like get the juices in your stomach to like, you know.
Totally.
So like that's the sole purpose of salty. No, they're like, no, it's delicious. I'm like, okay.
Yes.
I'm just gonna let that one go.
Betsy, I thought for some reason you had a teen. Those are not teen snack
well,
tastes.
Well, I have a girl who thinks she's a teen. Okay. She's 12. She's informed us that she is a teen. And the teen like fights we have had. Yes. So
boy.
But all about put on some pants. It's freezing outside. It's 32 degrees in February. Why are you limiting my choices in life? It's like, I'm not limiting your choices.
Right. I'm
limiting the harm to your body. Put on some pants. It was a whole discussion.
Let her live her life, Betsy. That's so, I can't believe.
I know,
believe.
Exactly. I'm like, pants? Your life is stupid. I'm not letting you live a stupid life. Put on some pants. Or just a coat. Yeah. Put a coat on. Put a coat.
Something.
Like, she's, this is a coat. I'm like, that is a sweatshirt. That is not a coat. I don't
so
know
we
what the coat is. Yeah.
We champion choice up until you're making poor choices
I'd be
for
like,
yourself.
We let her make lots of choices. She put a colored streak in her hair and all sorts of stuff and has dressed herself since God knows when. But I'm just put on some pants. That's the one thing I insist on. And she's just like, oh, my unreasonable parents. We're like, we're very unreasonable. You're correct. Put on some pants.
Yeah, pants.
Yeah, right.
Freaking
we stand
freaking
by
you're not wearing the blowy skirt. In the February. February seems to have no impact on this argument. I'm like, February. She's like, I do not understand the words coming out of your mouth. I'm like, what is this? Coldest month of the year? She's like, no never heard
not
of
interested.
It.
Yeah, in Chicago, no less. Like it's in, not.
Yeah, well,
it's not
exactly. Well, we were north of Chicago. We were up in at a water park. It was an indoor water park, but still.
I was going
to
go
outside
say,
once in a while. And I was like, put on some pants. Like, no. She's going to wear the wet bathing suit on her skirt. I'm like,
there was a wet bathing suit involved.
There was also
good
some wet
golly.
Bathing suits involved. Yeah, it was a whole
thing. Good golly.
Shout out to what I presume is Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, yes. Well,
been there.
Identified.
Yeah. Indoor
well
water park.
Identified.
North of Chicago.
Indoor water
been
park.
There. Love it.
Yeah. It's a great water park. I have to say, we've never done it before. And fantastic. Two thumbs up. Highly recommend. Don't eat there. But everything else they got going on is great. So, yeah.
What is the. Shout out to the hot dog chain. There's one right around the corner from Great Wolf Lodge. Hot dog chain in Chicago.
Oh, he probably is. I don't know. The only one we have here
is Portillo's.
Oh, Portillo's. Yeah, of course. Portillo's.
Shout out to Portillo's.
The largest piece of cake. There we go. Look at that. Look at me.
Bringing it back.
Looping it back. Big. Really? Like, it's half a cake. They just give you a half cake and they're like, here you go. I have yet to take my kids there. We thought about selling when we were at Great Wolf Lodge and we were like, I just was like, that's just too much cake. Just a kid.
You need pants. It's a whole thing.
You need pants, and I'm not giving you cake.
Yeah, they don't serve you there without pants. So
exactly, no pants, no service. That's what I'm saying. But speaking of cake, let me bring this all back again. So when you were writing this book, did you already know the plot from the start? Are you a pantser? Ah, here we go with the pants. Are you a seat of your pants? Just writing as you go. Just whatever the words are going on the page. That's what it is. Or do you plot every little scene?
Or are you a caker?
A caker.
Nice.
As the terminology would insist, because the opposite of pants is cake, and cake is pants.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, that's an awesome question because, okay, number one, I am a pantser, but in this case, I wrote it how I write everything else. Like, I just had an idea, and then I sort of started, I have to write, like, to uncover the gems, which, quick side note, I've been reading recently Stephen King's On Writing, and there is a whole thing in there. Dude, it's so good. Oh my gosh.
Great book. Yeah.
So I was reading this thing in there that, like, really, another quick side note. So I just went to the ABLA conference in Big Sur. It was amazing. It was a couple weekends ago. And they talked all about, I got to listen to a panel with Aidan Thomas, and he was talking all about how he'll spend like 6 weeks on a plot line, like on an outline, right? Just like putting in all the plot, like all the plot points, making sure everything is right, whatever, you know, with these like longer books. And part of me was like, oh man, that actually sounds like really great. Like I should probably start doing that. It would save me like a ton of time, but like, I can't write like that. I have to write to the story. So anyway, so bringing back to Stephen King. So he said this thing in the book that I was reading just a couple nights ago, that he was like, yeah, I feel like stories are like fossils where you have to like uncover them. And I was like, yes. I'm like, yes. The great Stephen King says that like, this can be a way to write. This is like a viable thing to do. I was like, okay, screw the plot, screw the outline. Like, I'm going to just write the way that I like to write. And Stephen King says it's okay. So like, cause I very much identify with that. Like, yeah, I get like a piece of an idea. And then it's like, it's very much, yeah, like I have to uncover it, but like with the writing, like I can't, he also said, you know, writing an outline sort of feels really stifling to him, which I also agree with. Same with the podcast. Like if I come into the podcast with a bunch of pre-written questions or like ideas of things that I really want to ask, I generally sound like, I tell Josh a lot, like a sad robot, because I sound very rehearsed, robotic, you know?
What
like it's
is
not
your
spontaneous.
Inspiration for this book?
Yes. Yeah, just I know what you like mean. That.
So sad robots have their appeal, but not on podcasts.
Right. No. So
I don't
do,
listen to any robots on podcasts.
No, none.
Weird.
So I do much better when I don't have a preset like answer or question or like whatever, it comes out much better. So to circle way back around to our actual question, I am a pantser, but with this one, I did have a clear idea about what I wanted to say and where I wanted it to go, as opposed to just like a morsel of like, ooh, that sounds really fun. Let me just like start writing. So this one came out a lot faster than most of my other ones. And then also got picked up way faster. Yeah. So that was really nice. Cause I did have this idea about like, yeah, like it was all about choice and like having a choice, and that was really important. And I also, I've been asked about the ending a lot. And I ended it that way because I also felt like it was really important for people to know, like, hey, if you make this choice at some point in your life, you can always make another choice.
Yeah.
You're not like beholden to this choice
that's
for your
true.
Entire lifetime, right? Like you
that's not
can...
now your personality. You're not that person who made that choice, which people really like you to be because it makes things simple and we like simple things.
Totally.
Like, you're that guy. Like, no.
Yes.
You're no pants or you're no cake.
You're
that's
now
who you
never...
are.
Yeah, totally. Like if I said to my daughter for the rest of her life, well, you're the one who doesn't like wearing pants, she'd be like, I was 12. Like that would be a whole thing. So,
yeah, but that's a family thing, right?
That's a family
thing. Like, that's what we're supposed to do.
And that's the temptation, right? It's like if you suddenly start collecting, you know, frog statues and then decide you don't want them anymore, that's too bad because every person in your life now knows you collect frog statues. So that's what you're going to get the rest of your life.
Yes.
That's
totally.
You now. You're that.
Totally.
You made a choice.
Why did you put several of my family members on blast for their collection?
Exactly. I'm just saying, gift giving is hard.
Right?
And if you're know that you like blue frogs, freaking getting you a blue frog every time I see one. Yeah.
Every single
I don't
time.
Care, you already own it. I'm getting you that frog.
Here it is. Yeah.
This is not a hypothetical. I knew a guy who collected blue frogs. So
Does he still, or has he made the choice to now like something else?
I think it doesn't matter at this point. The choice was made. And once that choice was made, he's locked into it for life because everyone will give him blue frog.
Betsy, have you read this book I'd like to recommend?
There you go. You can change. I'm not the one giving him the blue frog. I think you gotta give it to the other people.
You can change your mind.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God. Well tied in.
What are we doing?
So you're talking about like chipping away at the plot of a book, which are like, but was there something that you wanted to put in the book that didn't make the final cut? Like you loved it, you adored it, you thought it was brilliant, and then by the end of the book, it's gone.
Yeah. So I actually got to keep a lot of things in, which was awesome. So the part about being vegan, that is true to my life. And also the part about the flax egg, same, also true to my life.
That was a fascinating. I was almost like, is she just making that up because it's medieval times and they have a lot of flax? Like literally, that was my first thought. I was like, a lot of flax in the olden times, making a lot of linen out of flax.
Right.
That must be just a medieval equivalent of something. No, that's the thing. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're going to love this story, Betsy. So it's a quick side story. I told this last week when we were talking to our friends, Jenny and Audrey, but my dad. So my mom also went vegan for a little while, dairy-free, rheumatoid arthritis reasons, like that kind of thing. So she was also trying to get rid of like eggs and dairy and whatever. So my dad is great about like taking a list, going to the store, like I'll get all the stuff on the list, no big deal, I'll do the shopping. My mom's like, great. So she put flax egg on the list for my dad to go to get at the store. And he's very stubborn. He's very like diligent, right? He's not going to leave without that flax egg. So he was there for like an hour up and down the aisles searching for this flax egg. Is it by the eggs? Is it in a box? Like, what am I looking for?
Did he ever ask anybody there?
He finally asked somebody and they were like, oh, they're like, you have to buy the flax seed and then you make the flax egg by mixing it with water. And he's like, oh my. He's like, okay, give me the flax, give me the bag of flax. Like, I'll go home, I'll make the egg. But it's not a thing. Like, it doesn't come made. You have to mix it. It's like chia seed egg, same thing. Like, you mix it.
Do you make it
into an egg shape?
No. So it's just a binder.
It's egg.
It's just a binder. So it's an egg. Like the egg name comes because it gets sticky, like egg whites.
So I'm just imagining taking flax and trying to like mold it into an egg shape.
No, it's real runny. Real runny and sticky. So like you mix it in a glass, you let it sit for like 3 minutes or something.
Gotcha.
And then you just pour it in.
So much clearer.
So it's like egg whites. Same with chia seeds.
Okay.
So
the shape does not matter.
No. It can be any shape you want.
To be fair to your dad in this story, if someone had put on my shopping list cake and expected me to get the stuff for cake,
just to bring it back around,
I understand.
You would have bought a cake,
absolutely.
Actually, quite frankly, yeah,
fair, which is much easier.
No, I would have as well. Yeah,
it's totally fair. But anyway, so I got to keep those two things in, which was awesome. The one thing that it sort of stayed in, but it got tweaked, was like that sort of wall of dialogue about like. You know, define, she was like, what if I can't handle that much sugar? And he's like, define handle. And then she goes off on this whole thing about like, you know, the lights going out and all the stuff. So my editor, Adam, helped me figure out like how to make that more sort of story relevant, because my wall of dialogue originally was about like her like running off to the circus. And then she had like this last piece of article of clothing that she couldn't wear because she got like cake on it and it was this whole mess and she didn't want to wear this striped shirt, but then the circus thought that like she was part of the show and they picked her up and she had to live with the circus forever and a lion ate her and a whole thing. It was like this whole ridiculous like cumulative like, okay, I love this, but like what if we tie it in to the story? And I'm like, oh yeah, right. Good call.
Just reel in that stream of consciousness.
Yes. But I will say, I think part of the dialogue part and also the stream, like sort of the wall of dialogue, was in a sort of reminiscent of Adam Rex's Why book, which is what, which is what Adam actually comped it to in the actual like announcement, which I was like tickled to no end about. I was like, oh my God. And I tagged Adam Rex and the whole thing. And it was, you know, it was awesome. So yeah, so that part I did, I was really happy that we got to keep some wall of dialogue in. So it was sort of like a callback to that, because I love that he even thought to comp it to an Adam Rex book. Cause that did, I didn't, you know, think of that.
Does Adam know?
Yeah.
That Which was Adam? The inspiration? Adam Rex. Sorry. Adam Blackman, Adam Rex.
I know.
Does he know that he was the inspiration for that? I know that. So Betsy, we talked to Adam for the podcast as well, which was amazing. Amazing.
I love it.
I know he's got an arc as well. I wonder the extent to which he knows that he was the inspiration for that sort of
wall,
that component.
Well, so when I wrote it, that's not what I was thinking. But when Adam comped it to that book, I was like, oh, totally. And I mean, I had read that book before.
Oh,
it was
interesting.
Like, you know, shoved into my subconscious somewhere. So, you know, I'm sure it's not like I independently came up with that idea in a vacuum. Like, I'm sure it played some part, but I wasn't consciously thinking like, oh, I know how I'm going to write this. It just came out like that. And then when Adam comped it to the Adam Rex book, I was like, oh, that's kind of perfect. And also, oh my God, an Adam Rex book is being copped in my book, like amazing. So yeah. And then that's how, cause I tagged him on Twitter, obviously. Cause I was like, I'm like, Adam Rex, check it out. Like my book is copped to yours, which, you know,
let's be friends.
He was very gracious about like having his whole Twitter feed blow up because of this like tiny book that he doesn't know about. But I was stoked. So yeah.
You weren't going to let it go where he wasn't aware of it. That brings up a good question, though. And this is something that I think I do in my writing super consciously, is take patterns or take inspiration from other books. So you did it either subconsciously or just sort of de novo on your own, this element of this wall of text that ended up very smartly being comped to Adam's book. But I consciously write to, I'm going to try. So I've got a manuscript that is in two parts. It's a very different story than Bikes for Sale, but it is my version of the Bikes for Sale meet cute. I'm trying my hand at that sort of pattern of writing. Do you ever do that? I don't think so. I've read a bunch of most of your stuff, and I don't see that in your writing necessarily.
I haven't, but I think it's because I think it's the same reason I don't plot, is because I find it really stifling. So I think I sort of like file stuff away in my brain. And then when it comes out, it probably has pieces and parts of stuff that I've really liked, but it's like sort of an amalgam of like all of that. Because I will say, so the Michael Slack books, Dinosaurs on Kitty Island and Kitties on Dinosaurs. Do you guys know those books?
No, I don't know those
books. I love those books. Yeah. And they're told in this amazing second person voice, which is so good. He's like, oh, kitties. He's like, don't do that. That doesn't look like a good idea. Oh no, you're doing, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like it's so smart and it's so funny. And my kid loves them. And I've tried several different times with different, like, cause I have a couple of characters that I just haven't been able to like make the manuscript work with. And I'm like, ooh, I could use that second person voice that I love so much. So I've tried and it just like, it doesn't work. Cause I'm like thinking of his book too much. And I feel like if I do that, it comes out very much like his book, which is like, you know, that's called plagiarism. That's not just for society. So
that's a whole different thing. That is frowned upon by society.
Yeah. So not super cool system. In a writing career. So I can't, I don't know. I can't really do that. I don't know. It doesn't work in my brain. It's the same reason, like if I'm watching a webinar and I take notes, I'm taking notes, like intending to use them at some time and like circle back around. I never do.
Hey everybody. The first time that I did this mid-up break, I sounded like I was falling asleep, and that is not a great feel for a podcast. So we are here and we're doing it again. Hey, the first thing that I want to say is a, it's a shout out, it's a commercial, it's a plug. Hey, if you haven't gotten your own copy of The Law of Birthdays, it's really easy to do it, and you should probably do it the same way that I did and not buy it from Amazon, but instead buy it from Brenna's hometown or new hometown bookstore, Boulder Books. So Boulder, B-O-U-L-D-E-R, bookstore.com is where you can get it. It's very easy. They're very communicative, and they're great at emailing, and I expect mine shortly as soon as it is released. Please go get yourself a copy and then do yourself and us a favor, Brenna especially a favor, and give it a review. Review it on Goodreads or wherever you put your reviews, and we thank you for that. And now for the reviews of some of our other books. Brenna's review for this week is not for her book. It is for I Do Not Eat Children by Marcus Cutler. This subversive fun read aloud sports an orange unibrowed monster who insists he does not eat children, but as you follow along, young readers will immediately spot the issue in the quirky illustrations. Read for the laughter and stay for the twist ending. That's twist ending one of three today. John's review this week is I Am Not a Chair by Ross Burak, a laugh out loud story about a misunderstood giraffe that wants to show the animal kingdom that it is indeed not a chair, but will anyone listen? I assume the answer is no. This story is simple but well crafted with layers of tension and a hilarious twist conclusion. John's a sucker for twist endings. That's twist two out of three. Overall, a wonderful tale with bright and silly illustrations that kids will undoubtedly ask to read again and again. John gives this story 5 spotted living room chairs out of 5. Twist ending number 3, or reveal, I suppose. In a rare book-based disagreement with my youngest daughter, I am bringing the drama and recommending a book we mention a little bit later in the episode, but only briefly, namely Evergreen by Matthew Cordell. It is a rare treat for a rambling adventure to fit so well in a picture book format. It covers a lot of ground. It's got danger, it's got family drama, heroism, betrayal, soup in an acorn, what I have to assume is an allusion to Lord of the Rings, and astute nerds will know what I'm talking about if they read this book, as well as a stunning and hilarious reveal in the book's climax. My daughter did not like to read this one because of the scary hawk, but if you can get over that, you'll have a blast. Or if you're like me, you can just wait until your kid falls asleep and then you can read it for yourself. Those are our 3 twisty books for this week. Hey, if you like a book, if you have things to say or things that you have thought but not put down in words about a book, do yourself a favor and go on and just give it a couple of sentence review. It means a lot to an author. Go on Goodreads, go on Amazon, go on boulderbookstore.com and review a book today, and an author will get their wings or maybe just be, you know, feel a little bit better about themselves. It means a lot. So go out and do a review. And also, hey, if you would like to do a shout out on the show or support the podcast, we have independent individual shout outs. We've got a Patreon. We've got a merch store, and we haven't done a merch push in quite a while. If you would like a Verse Show t-shirt or anything else that I just said, go to linktree.com/verse show and we will take care of all your podcast affinity and affection needs. Was that enough? I think it was enough. Let's go back to the episode with Brenna, with Betsy, with me. Yeah, you have a mental snack drawer, is really what you have. A bunch of nuts and, nice. And pretzels in your snack drawer that you just reach into.
Tying that together there. That's very good. Right. Totally a mental snack drawer, yeah. And there's that stuff in the back that you never get to, yeah.
But yeah, right, right.
It's going to sit there for 5 years. No one's going to clean it out.
No, totally.
Oh, exactly. That's good.
Yes. Yes.
So how similar was the final product to the initial draft?
Actually, really similar.
That sounds like it was, yeah.
Yeah, I was really surprised. They actually said they were like, we're really excited to find, you know, something that we like a lot and that, you know, doesn't need that much editing, which, you know, of course, for an author is sort of like a dream come true. You're like, oh, yeah. Oh really? Like, okay, amazing. We don't have to like tear this down.
Would it not be cake? Are we married to the cake right. idea?
Right, totally. Or like, could you not write it in all dialogue? Could you please write it in like third right. person? I'd be like, oh
yeah,
God.
They could definitely do that. Yeah, right? That sounds very much like them. Yeah.
Which, I mean, writing third person is, I find, tricky anyways. Like, I have a couple of manuscripts that go that way just because that's what the story wants. But like I said, I don't know. I tend to write more in dialogue. So I was really happy that they let me keep it that way because mm-hmm. I felt like it was a lot easier for me to showcase the personalities of the two of them through dialogue than like anything else. So, yeah.
I feel like there's something to explore here. Maybe there's not. This notion that your debut that happened so fast and drafted so fast was because the idea sprang sort of fully formed Aphrodite-like from your... No, or was that Athena-like?
Athena. That'd be Athena.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'm mentally corrected.
But Aphrodite sprung from the sea, so that's not completely...
Somebody yeah. sprang from
there's
something.
There's a lot of springing.
Still yeah. springing, yeah. yeah.
Springing mm-hmm. fully yeah. formed, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's something there that you didn't... There wasn't like overthinking for Law of Birthdays. You didn't get in your own way and let the story be what it wanted to be. I don't know if that's like a thing that you can unlock for everything that you write. Certainly it's not. But I wonder if not getting in your own way and being, you know, as Brenna's brain wants to be, is what sort of made it work.
I mean, I feel like there's definitely some truth to that because there is a story that, Josh, you know very well, that I've done like 50 different versions of, right? Like, which is not an exaggeration, literally like 50 different angles, different ways, different, you know, protagonists. And I feel like it's because I just love the story so much that I just can't let it go. Like, as soon as I have one draft down, I'm like, oh no, like I totally missed like this angle. Like I should rewrite it. Let me tear it down. Let me go from this angle. Like colors should be the forefront, or like this MC should be the forefront, or I should pull this piece of the story up and like shove the rest of it back. Or like, it's too much. I'm like, what am I actually trying to say here? And I think also part of it, so part of that one, which is so troublesome, that the thing I really wanted to say was that I wanted kids to take away that like imagination is this really powerful thing. And it feels like in today's landscape of books that are being published, not that imagination is not important, but it's also not the forefront of the messaging for books. Like imagination and sort of fun for the fun of it has kind of like circled out a bit, it seems like, you know, and we're sort of more towards like, you know, more like intense messaging or more serious topics for the minute anyways. Not that, you know, fun things aren't being published, but it sort of felt like that wasn't enough of a hook, which I think was the problem for me. I was like thinking too much about the market and like whether or not it would be picked up because I care about the story so much. Whereas with Cake, I was like, I think I was mad enough that I was like, this is the message. This is what I need to say. This is how I need it to go. So yeah, that might be
in a fun way.
Oh, right, in a fun way, yeah.
Letting fury fuel your writing, but in a fun way.
But for funsies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, fun fury writing.
Huh. And I know this is not, it's you, Betsy, you are not here for questioning, but I just wanted to, on that point, ask you what you thought about sort of the landscape of books and whether or not, like, maybe I'm totally missing the mark there, or if I'm sort of on about, because I have heard also recently editors are more and more saying like, no, we do want books fun for the fun of it, like we're trying to lighten things up a little bit, and like that seems to, like I've heard that but I haven't seen it.
It's because I've seen like, you know, just the slew, just the huge amount of picture books just hitting me, and I have to triage, I have to pull the ones that look more interesting, so it's kind of self-selecting. At the same time, there's tons of fun quote books out there. Are they good fun? But there's fun, but but there is a lot of meaning. I call them meaningful, important.
Yes,
these are important books. Yes. These are important for you to read, kid. Not fun. They're not fun.
Yeah,
they're not even that great sometimes, but they're out there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them. And that's what, so the publishers always have their meaningful books on their list. It depends, like, there's the big guys who can just do everything, but they're not going to publicize everything. They're going to select which ones they think deserve the publicity. And then there's the little guys, but they're also going to have unless they're an all meaningful all the time publisher, which do exist, they're going to try to mix it up and have a couple fun and a couple silly and then a couple meaningfuls as well and try to mix it in. But yeah, meaningful went spiked like way, way, way up in the last few years. Nothing wrong with that. Good to have some meaningful. It's just when the balance is off that it's a problem. And getting kids to read, I mean, what kids want a lot of the time is silly. So I always say that I can't write meaningful. I'm never going to win big awards because I'm not good.
Same.
I'm not going to kill anyone's dog. I'm not going to kill a dog. I'm sorry. Yeah. I can't. I don't even know how to kill dogs. The dog would just like crack a joke if I tried. So
are there picture books that kill dogs?
Yes.
Picture books. Yeah. Oh, sure. Oh,
no,
sure. You're dead, dead
I would
dog
never.
Books? Well, they have dead to be about the dead dog, right? They got to be about like the meaning of the dog's life. The dog was very old, but it was still making its way to the seashore every day because it loved the rose. Yeah,
yes.
There's, you know, it's fine, but it's all about the dead dog. And they have a purpose, like because we get as a librarian, you get the parent walking in, being like, "I need a dead dog book. My dog's about to die."
It's you're like I've
you
got
that.
Several.
All right. Where's it? We don't have a dead dog section, but we can pull out the dead dog books and give them to you, and you can look through them and be like, no, my dog's not a chihuahua. So, yeah.
Right.
But you know, that's a whole different genre. The parent who comes in with a one thing they want, like dead grandparents, and we're like, we got you. You know, it's like.
I mean, Josh, that's the famous Betsy Bird quote. I mean, right? Like, funny is so subjective. Not everybody thinks that funny is funny, right?
Exactly. But dead dogs, everybody understands
everybody,
the dead dog.
Everybody is sad about
the
dead
dog. We feel bad. We all can feel the same.
Right.
But, hey, here's this joke I heard. You tell it. And everyone's like, some people are like, ugh. And some people are like, eh. And some people are like, that's hilarious. It's like,
yes.
You know, there's no way to predict. You know,
which is,
I mean, if you know the people, but yeah.
What's the dead dog but for laughs is the question.
Oh, well, there was the one. My favorite was the one where like someone's turtle died and then they put it in a box and attach it to a balloon and set it up in the sky. And I'm like, freaking turtle's going to land in somebody's head at some point. It's terrifying. I found it hilarious. It was not meant to be hilarious, but I still think that was one of the funniest books I ever saw. So there you go. That one.
Is that why there's more fun than funny? That's probably a given.
Yeah. I would say yes. It's funny because you do get, boy, when you can get a funny book that is all like almost like universally, like anyone who, like last year, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see Mr. F?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We love that book.
That's
funny from
universal
the pitch. We all read the pitch in PW Children's Bookshelf. You know, they have the pitches like, and they even in the pitch, they were like, kids go to kindergarten for the first day. There's a sandwich on the table. And they're not sure if that's their teacher or not. I'm like, well, that's just A, that was a gag on, oh, that TV show I like so much. The Good Place. There was remember the burrito on the judges? And they're like, is the judge the burrito or is the burrito the judge? That was where I feel like she might have gotten the idea. But it doesn't matter because just the premise was
not
funny.
Plagiarism.
And then the book. No, it wasn't a burrito. It was a sandwich. And then the book itself was very funny and very well done. And so anyone who saw it, but did it win any awards? Of course it did not win any awards.
Right.
It's a funny book. We don't have a funny book award except for the Sid Fleischman Award that SCBWI gives out, which is, I'll just say, arbitrary. Like, again, that
subjective.
Is good. That is very subjective. It is definitely a case where I'm like, really? That book? Really?
Yeah, because funny. Mm. I mean, you can't hit funny with everybody. And I think I've heard you talk about this before too. Like, it gets really specific really quick. Because, like, even in like a family culture, things are funny that won't be funny even like one tier further.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't even explain like why that's funny. Like, it just, you know, like it doesn't translate. So trying to be funny like across the board for like a bigger audience is really hard. So like. That's why, I mean, this is my meaningful book, right? But I also had to make it funny because I'm like, I also don't really write meaningful. I'm like, there's going to be a
mix.
Book in
that's
there.
That's what
so
you
like,
want. You want the funny and the meaningful to be kind of intertwined. That's ideal because then the kids are enjoying it. And then the message doesn't feel like you're taking a stick and just hitting them over the head with it, you know?
Right.
Because that's what some of these books just feel like. It's like, I get it. They get it.
I got it. Check.
They don't even want it, and they got it. Yeah. But yours does not feel like that. Yours feels like something they'd actually enjoy. It's a funny concept. It also has a little meaning in there. It's like, that's what you want. That's the sweet spot.
I mean, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that because, yeah, that's really what I was hoping for. Like, I was really hoping that it didn't come across like didactic or like, because there is one line at the very end that's like, you know, that's what I want, a choice. And at that line, I would, you know, I read it sometimes. I'm like, is it too much? I don't know. Like, but I also love the scene where there's the mutiny and the king is like watching like the other kids, like tie him to the balloons and he goes out the window and he's like, that's not what I want. Okay. Yeah. So anyways,
the funny thing, I love the sort of inference of comparing Mr. S, which is an absolutely wonderful book, to Law of Birthdays, because there's something so like critical about the realm of the ridiculous, where the people that are engaging in it have to accept the premise of the gag that you're engaging in, right? Like, are you going
to
have
them? They're living that existence. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They have to treat it, you know, seriously.
Right. They're dead serious.
Yeah.
This ridiculous situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So is there ever going to be a kingdom where, or some sort of government where there's a law where you have to eat cake? I don't know. Some of the laws that, you know, are put in place seem pretty arbitrary sometimes, but no. Once you get beyond that or architect a premise that is acceptable and engaging and you lead your audience in, then you can be a bit wackier. I think it really works.
Now, of course, this leads to the natural question. Is there going to be another book set in this kingdom, or is this a one-off? Is this just the one?
I mean, yeah, I would love for another book to be set in the kingdom. So first of all, so when it comes out in May, because it's not really even out, so I don't really know what people think about it, like, except for my friends who are like, you know, very kind and are like, no, we love this book. Like, this is great. But like,
we're more than kind.
Yes. And the Kidlit community in general, right, is just very kind, very generous. Like, nobody's going to be like, this book kind of sucks. So like, so I don't know. So I mean, I would love to write another book in this kingdom because, you know, I feel like the king is such a great foil to this girl who is just very much like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, why would you make us do that? You know? So yeah, I think that would be really fun. But I suppose, you know, like any other book, we'll have to wait and see how it actually does. Right. Like, if it's actually funny, like if the masses actually think it's funny, because like, I think it's funny. Josh thinks it's funny. You know what I mean? So like, but who knows? It's so subjective.
That's two sales. That's two good Reads reviews.
Perfect. Yeah. So I would love that.
What does success look like for the book?
Okay. So that's a great question. And I will tell you this. So this morning I was telling my husband, Gene, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, today's the day. I'm like, Betsy's going to come on the podcast. She's going to interview me. Like, it's going to be amazing. And I was like, but I don't know what to expect. Like, what do I say? Like, will she like my book? I don't know. So he was like, yeah, but dude, he's like, think about it. So I have the arcs. I've had them for, you know, several months. And my kid picked my book for like 9 nights in a row to read.
Ooh.
So success done already.
Nicely done.
Because my kid is brutal, Betsy. We used to play this game called Keeper or Dud. We'd get a pile of books from the library like this and go through them. I would read them.
I love
Keeper,
that.
Dud.
And that's a future brutal literary critic you got going on there. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's a lot of duds out there.
But right? But I was very nervous about the fact that like he would think my book was a dud. So I kept just sort of like laying it out for him. I'm like, here are your choices. I didn't say anything. I was just very casual. But he kept picking it. And I was like, so I'm thinking success. I feel good.
Very nice.
Oh, I thought you started that anecdote saying this interview was your measure of success because we got Betsy here to talk about your book. Nope.
I mean, yeah. Because the other thing was, yeah, I was like, well, okay, she's probably not going to come on if she hated my book. So also success.
It's true. I would not, actually.
Yeah, I'm busy that day.
Hate. You know, it's like we actually – so my library has a 101 Great Books for Kids committee.
Yes.
And we read all the books we can. But we have this year instituted a new shelf. We have a shelf where, like, you know, if some, you know, needs more reads, we have a needs more reads shelf. And we have I'd like to read that next shelf. We have that called the Switcheroo shelf. And now we've created a new shelf. And it's the meh. It's like, don't waste your time. Put it on. I was going to call it the schlock shelf, but people thought that was too weird sounding. So it's the meh shelf. And so just put it on there. Don't. People have only so many minutes to live their life in this universe.
Don't bother.
Why would a bunch of, because we had had a path problem in the past where someone would be read a mad book and go like, eh, and then put it right back on the shelf and someone else would take it and be like, eh, and they'd put it back. So now we just create a whole shelf of them.
And it's all spine out and they're just crammed in there so that nobody can get it off the shelf.
There's a big old pile on top of it so you can't even tell what's in there. It's like, if we'll look at it, if something gets a Kirkus star and we have to find it in there, we will, but.
Chances are low.
The chances are low.
No.
I feel bad. I will never show anyone who is in it. Those poor authors. Can you imagine? They're like, I took a picture of them. They'd be like, hey, that's my book. Like, that would suck.
Yes.
So bad.
No, totally.
So,
if you know
the shelf exists, and it's nobody's book that anyone you know. Nobody.
Nope.
Yeah,
no
if
one
you're listening,
ever heard
it's
of.
Not you.
Nope.
Don't worry.
It's nope. All people from France.
Nope.
There you go. Yeah. All imports.
The French are notorious for poor quality picture books.
Yeah, right, they haven't completely cornered the board book market or anything. My God, every single good board book, I'm like, oh, this is great. Ah, this stupid French board book. All of them. Like, I blame Hervé Toulé.
Hey, Brenna, why are our downloads in France? Why are our downloads down in France? It's because Betsy's hated on an entire country.
Yeah, right.
No, I just conceded that their board books are like the best in the world. So there you go. Also, their picture books are really good too.
I feel like Europe in general.
Do you anticipate or would you like, as a measure of success or interest or otherwise, to do school visits on this? Do you think about how you would present it? Or library visits?
I do think about that. You know what I think would be fun is to just do, like, I love reading it aloud. That's really fun for me. And I also think, like, doing, like, a project and, like, engaging with the kids would be really fun. But beyond that, I'm sort of like, I don't want to do a whole presentation on, like, the book itself and, like, how, I don't know. Maybe if I came up with a good presentation and, like, a fun way to present it.
You should buy a really disgusting sounding cake. And then give everyone a piece and be like, y'all actually have to eat this.
Right? It's the love.
And then when they balk, be like, oh, you don't want to eat it? Well, guess what? You just
That's
need to
a great
bake horrible
segue.
Cakes every yes. time you have a school visit. You don't even have to give it to them. Just have it there. Make it look as gross as humanly possible. Just like
pour
a real,
like gravy on top before I give it to them.
Yeah, gravy
like,
is a good,
That's
yeah.
a great hook.
There you go. Like,
yeah,
look at this cake.
Right?
Ugh, I pitched gravy flavored fondant in last week's episode as well. And
oh,
that didn't fly.
You got the same response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Now we want it. For this purpose. Yeah.
Right.
It has a place.
It's because I have go ahead.
I was just gonna say you could have the kids make flax eggs. Since that has been subject of so much discussion.
Totally.
I mean, you should make a book about a flex egg and where a kid thinks it's an actual egg. I think it's already.
I think it's writing
Ooh,
itself. I think
different
you're right,
weird
Betsy.
Edible eggs. Flax egg, century eggs.
Yes.
Like, oh, yeah. There's
chia
a whole,
seed egg.
Chia
yep.
seed egg. Yep.
There's there's another one that's just called like an egg, like vegan egg, but it comes in a bag. It's like a powder, but it's like similar. It's like a similar concept.
An egg powder. Come on now.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Egg powder.
But I do think with the presentation, like if I were to give it more thought and come up with something that I thought was fun to do, mm-hmm. then I could be like amenable. But I think like going to a library and doing like a story time would be really fun and like an activity or like a, you know, like a local bookstore where like kids like to come and just like interact with the author and like I said, just like chat about whatever. But I think doing a whole overall thing, it feels really, what's the word, like detached from the kids because it doesn't feel like, it just feels like, hey, I'm the author and you should listen to me about things that I know. But maybe I haven't thought about it. So I should really like.
That's how they all
You're
go.
Saying,
it's really weird. Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah.
You would rather sit on the carpet than read the book out loud.
Yes,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's not going to work if you're speaking to an entire school. Let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Right. So I think maybe that's not my niche.
Yeah.
No,
that's all.
Yeah, I think I'd lose them real quick.
They can't see you. Like you're on the carpet and they're like, where'd she go?
Yeah, right. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've talked with lots of authors on the podcast about ways to move books and whether certain types of marketing actually moves the needle. Have you talked to Cardinal Rule about aligning on tactics and things that you're planning on doing? marketing
wise? They're actually really great. Like, small presses tend to be better about having marketing plans, which is awesome.
They have a smaller list.
So they've been kind of amazing. Like, they send me like spreadsheets, and they have like a you know, like every month they'll be like, here are the things that you need to get done. Here, you know, here's what you need to do, cross this off the list, like reach out to whoever. So that's been really, really helpful. I will say there have been things on that list where I'm like, wow, that's like a lot of things. Like, I don't think I have time for that. Or like, you know, reach out to like people you know with blogs and offer to like write, you know, guest blogs about, you know, whatever, which
this is where they're coming from. Doggone it. Hey, can I write a guest piece? I'm like, oh,
you're like, really?
I'll do it in a while.
But you're on the mess shelf.
Yeah, exactly. How do you tell them that? It's impossible to tell them that.
Yes.
This is why they're all asking. Okay.
Yes. That makes sense. Now, you know, here's the
thing. If it's an author, here's a tip. Here's a pro tip. If it's an author asking me for this, I'm going to feel bad if I say no. If it's a publicity person, I'll feel bad. That's just one of their clients. I can say no to them all day. So, but if it's the editor, then I get like, ooh. I actually care more about if an editor pitches something than if an author does. Because the editor has a lot of different books they're working on, but this is the one that they think is important enough to hawk. I'm like, okay, all right, editor.
That's a good point.
So editors pay more attention. I don't know that anyone else does, but I notice if it's an editor. And if it's a PR firm, screw that. I don't care. I'm like, you're a firm. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody cares.
Right.
No, I'm not gonna let them know.
Uh-uh. Yeah. No, and so the reason I wanted to do a podcast in the first place is because I like to talk about the books. I don't want to write about writing. I hate that. That sounds so boring to me. Like, and I'm not good at it. It's going to be me like laboring over like what to say here. How did I say this? Or is this a run on? Like, I need that bandwidth for my actual writing.
Right.
So like, I'm not reaching out to people to ask to be guest blogs on their stuff. Like, there's a couple of like friends of mine. Yeah.
How many blogs are there? Stuff. I mean, to be perfectly frank, blogs are not what they used to be. There are not a lot of blogs out there anymore. So
that's the other piece of it.
Who are they contacting besides me?
I'm like, who are they? Yeah, and who are they?
It's you and Tara Lazar. Yeah.
And also,
it's me,
Tara
Lazar, and Travis Yonker. And
who's reading them, right? Like, I read yours, and I do read Tara's.
Everyone reads yours and Tara's, Betsy. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody reads Betsy Bird's blog. Anyways.
Very kind. You're very kind.
Yeah, there's some of them that I'm just like, I'm going to go to all this work, and like, that's not going to do anything. So to circle back, like, yeah, like, do the thing that you like to do because it's fun, not because it's going to move the needle. Because as the author, I don't think I can actually move the needle that much, which is fine. Like, that's fine. That's the publisher's job. Like, they have the big bucks and like the outreach and the whatever. And I will do what I can. Of course, I'm going to market my book. But I'm only going to do the stuff that I have the bandwidth for and that I think are like enjoyable. Because otherwise, like if I say I do write these blogs, they're not going to be good because I don't want to do it. It's not fun for me. They're going to come out
and
like really
horrible.
Trust
me, we can tell when the person didn't want to do it. And it's like, really? This is
totally.
Okay. That's why I always do them on Saturdays because I'm like, put them on Saturday. Nobody reads me on Saturday. Joke's on you. I don't even tweet about them on Saturday.
Like, so good luck, man.
The secret's out now. Anybody whose blog post comes out
on
Saturday.
If you end up on a Saturday, unless there's a distinct reason. Like, I do have a post coming out this Saturday, but that's because it's the anniversary of something, and that was the day that it fell on. So that's not his fault. I put you on Sunday. Yeah, that's got to be the worst insult I've ever made in my life, yeah. Nobody reads Sunday. Like,
nobody's
Saturday.
Coming
like,
Sunday.
People work in libraries on Saturday. They read blogs, but they don't Sunday. Nope.
That's again why I love the podcast so much, because I genuinely enjoy it and I feel like that comes across, and so that's fun for me, and I think that's why people, you know, want to listen to us, because we actually enjoy it. A blog, nobody's gonna read my blog. I don't want to read my blog, so
people at least care enough to download. We have no idea if they actually listen or not, unless they reference something. But that's what's important.
But anyway,
there's no actionable insight coming from this for most authors, because most people, 99% of people, are not going to go and start a podcast, as easy as it is to do so. But do you feel like having this platform has been any advantage to you in your negotiation with Cardinal Rule, or activating people on Law of Birthdays? as something that you're doing that you're excited about? Or is it, is that irrelevant?
I think that because of the podcast, I think I've made a lot of connections in the kidlit world. Like I've made a lot of friends. And I think, you know, friends in the kidlit world, like I said before, are very kind, super generous. Everybody wants to uplift everybody else. And I think because of that, you know, regardless of the podcast or not, I'm a chatty person. I like to be involved. I like to make friends. I like to, you know, get out there. And I think that friends, you know, will lift me up and want to buy the book and just, you know, or request it from the library or whatever. So I think regardless that would have happened, but I will say the podcast itself has just been really fun for me. Like I just really like doing it. Like I like having a Friday morning where I get to like hang out with Josh and chat to a guest and just, you know, hear more about the behind the scenes or like how this, you know, author came up with their idea or what this publisher is doing or, and, you know, spreading that information I think is helpful for people. And so hopefully, you know, they are more inclined to like help me out when I am also, you know, trying to like get a book out or whatever, because it's, you know, the whole goal with the podcast is to spread information. So I hope, you know, that we're doing that and that it, you know, somehow makes like palatable, I suppose, like on Twitter, if I'm like, hey, you want to read my book? Do you want to like check out this launch event or whatever? People aren't like, oh God, like we never hear from her. And now she like wants us to check out whatever, you know, so.
Duly noted. I think it's fun too. We do it for the passion, not the bucks or the book purchases.
There are no bucks.
Mm-mm. No.
There are no bucks.
I know from no book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for coming on.
We're in this point now where you usually go, well, we're coming up on the hour.
I know, where I usually do the wrap up and now I have to like close myself out.
Yeah, no, you see,
I ain't doing
see
the wrap up,
out.
So y'all have fun with that. Yeah.
No,
I don't know your wrap up. Yeah.
Well,
I'll just make it up.
I will say we've got, I mean, you've been gracious enough to not talk about yourself and promote your own things, which I don't think you're particularly inclined to do, Betsy. But we could take a couple of minutes. Let's investigate what's going on with Betsy.
Oh, okay.
What's going on with Betsy?
I have a book coming out. Tell us.
Well, I don't know what publisher it's coming out with because it might move publishers. I've never had that happen before. So I'm not going to say where it's coming out from because I don't actually know at the moment. But it'll be coming out in the fall, supposedly. And it's illustrated by Andrea Cerumi. One of my favorite illustrators.
Yeah.
They did a book called Accident, one of my favorite picture books. Like the panoply of chaos in that book. That was the moment I read it and I was like, I want them to illustrate me someday. That is what I want.
Yes.
So the book is called Pop Goes the Nursery Rhyme. You were just talking earlier about, you know, the fourth wall breaking picture books out there. I hadn't really thought about it, but this is my first fourth wall breaking picture book because when I was a parent and I had kids, I'd read them nursery rhymes. That's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Give them a cultural appreciation for nursery rhymes. It's kind of a thing we can all relate to. And so yes. I'd read nursery rhymes to my small children, but you know, they're all the same. Every single time. Doesn't matter if you have a different version, the words are the same. And so after a while, not always, but usually. So I'd start to just like get punchy. And I would just sort of like start being like Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water and Jack fell down and broke his crown and pop goes the weasel. And oh my gosh, that's like 1.5 year old comedy gold. And I was like, this is a book. So it's basically a sneaky little weasel who is popping up in a bunch of other nursery rhymes. And this apparently just allowed Andrea Cerumi to go wild. So there's all sorts of wackadoodle stuff going on in the art. And then it's got this narrator who I just always assumed was just like a faceless narrator a la the book with no pictures. Mm-hmm. But Andrea was sort of like, no, it's a secretary bird. I'm like, what? And then sent me some pictures of what a secretary bird is. And they're the craziest freaking birds. And I was like, I didn't even intend to put a bird in this book. I put an ostrich in a book before. And I was like, my last name's Bird. But that was a freaking secretary bird. And you want to have a fun time, just watch a secretary bird pound a snake to death with its feet. That's fun. So that's the secretary bird.
Which is not depicted in your book.
No, now it is. And that's my narrator. And I'm like, why not? I'm a bird. Makes sense. I'm the bird who's like objecting all this stuff. So yeah, it's fun. It's just a lot of yelling that things should not be. It's basically Sam the Eagle, if you think about it. Sam the Eagle being like, this is silly, stop it, you know.
Yes.
You know, Monty Python. Love, this is all getting very silly. You know,
it's that, I love that premise. Yes. And I love the book Accident.
Oh, I love Accident.
I've read you referencing it several
My
times.
My avatar is often that librarian owl in that book.
Oh, yeah.
Who just doesn't care. Is just stamping a guy with like stamps. just gives no.
Yes.
No cares whatsoever. Yeah, yes. That is that, and Alexandria also makes that their avatar sometimes too, which is very confusing when we're emailing each other back. And we have the same thing. It's like, what is my idea of person? If it's actually their book, but,
it's so actually their illustration.
Exactly, they
but whatever, drew, whatever. So.
Awkward. They've got some rights to it. And when does it come out?
In the fall.
Oh, in the fall.
Don't know when.
We'll
where?
See.
Where? It might be in the spring, but at this point, it's supposed to be the fall. So.
That's awesome. Oh, I'm so excited to see it. Yeah. Amazing.
Very fun.
Hoot and holler.
Yeah.
And I stole the book, but it's not coming out until 2027. So have fun with that.
Good God.
Because the illustrator is Matthew Cordell, and he's a little bit busy.
Yeah.
But I had to get him. And that book is called Terrible, Terrible Birds by Betsy Bird.
Are you kidding me? More birds.
It's actually called, they're up right now. They're on my library. These peregrine falcons have nested on my library for the last 15 years, and they nest every year and they raise babies, and everyone was like, oh, you gotta write a book about them. I was like, what? Like, once upon a time there were two very capable birds and they made lots of babies at the end.
Yeah, right, boring.
But then they left and we got a pair of doofuses. Real real dumb birds. I'm talking idiots. Like, who did everything wrong every step of the way. Managed to have a baby last year. But just
super
every
relatable.
Step. And we were just like, you terrible birds, what are you doing? And I was like, that's a book. That's a book. So that's what the book is about.
The
about
book.
The stupid,
nice.
Stupid birds. And they're right out my window. I'm on the fourth floor. I can see where they nest. And I can see their stupidities. and I put them all in a book. So there you go. Stupid.
For the listening audience. Birds. Betsy's shooting daggers like up to the top of the video
they're,
frame.
Yeah, they haven't nested yet. It's February when we're recording this, but they will next month. They'll start nesting, and if they're smart, they'll do it on my library. And if they're dumb, they'll do what they did before and be across the street at the hotel in the gutter, and then be surprised when their eggs wash away because they're stupid, stupid birds.
Oh my gosh!
I have so many issues.
Amazing.
Anyway, it'll be a fun book. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's tie this back. This is leveraging, capitalizing on your fury for a fun premise.
Exactly. Exactly. Fury plus humor. Equals good picture book. Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's true.
I want to ask. Anger version of tragedy equals comedy plus time.
Exactly.
Or comedy equals tragedy plus time.
That's
plus
right.
Anger.
Plus anger.
Divided
right.
by anger.
Exactly.
With birth.
Right. I just wanted to ask real quick about Long Road to the Circus and if there will be any other middle grade or.
Well, So you were talking about a book that you like can't give up. And you just keep going back to it over and over again. I've got a middle grade, and it's a good idea. And anytime I tell someone the idea, they're like, that's a great idea. And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. And I just getting it right on the page is so hard. And I really can only write on writing retreats. And so we got one coming up in March. And so hopefully I'll get – my goal this year is to get this thing – like even just if I can just get 50 pages that I can like submit or something.
Yeah,
you know, that I'm happy with, but I need to make it more fun. It's just a fun book, and I think I'm not tapping into the fun enough. So I have a plan in mind for funification. We'll see if it works.
Awesome.
Just get mad.
Awesome.
Just get mad first.
I'll get mad. not
really
the right
mad.
Way. I need to be angry about something. Like stupid birds. Yeah.
Wait. So writing retreat in March, and then I mean, I'm assuming that the answer to this is yes, but it was just on my radar. The ALA conference in San Diego. Are you going to that also? Yes.
I believe so.
Yes.
We will see. I'm already getting Newbury Caldecott banquet invitations, and I'm kind of half being like, I think you need to know why.
Oh my gosh, the life is
much more tentative.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
We'll
see. Well, I think I also might be there, so maybe
okay,
I'll
good.
Get to
well,
see
then
you.
We can
run on
be like, hey, let's talk about Angry Birds.
Excellent.
My favorite topic. Yeah.
Okay, I want to, before we end, I was curious about this, and I suspect other people might be as well. You were talking about your 2027 book with Matthew Cordell, where the terrible birds concept. You had a say in Matthew. Was that a line in the sand that you drew him?
Well, it all came together. I was at the last ALA conference in Chicago. And I watched him on a panel. It was on classic feeling children's books because he's good at that. And I was watching him and I was like, this guy's got it. He loves drawing. He loves drawing wild animals. And, I don't know if you saw Poppy. Was it Poppy? Oh, see, he's got another one that has the word poppy in it. No, it was the one about the Little Red Riding Hood with the squirrel one that he had last year. Evergreen. That's it. Evergreen.
Oh, yes, Evergreen yes, came yes. Out last yep. year.
And there's that shot of the hawk. And I had seen it by that point. And I was like, this guy's great. So afterwards, I had a lunch with somebody. I was describing how great he was. And then the conversation inevitably, as all conversations do, turned to the stupid birds. And I actually was kind of telling them what I realized that as I was saying, it was the book where I was like, well, we had these amazingly competent birds and they had like 38 babies over the course of years. And in my book, I actually have the accurate name for everything because we banned the babies with the Field Museum. So we have the accurate names and they're a wackadoodle like crew of names. And then they left and then we had those stupid. And as I was saying it, I was like, oh, this is the book. This is the book. And then because I had just seen Matthew Cordell, I was like, and Matthew Cordell lives in Chicago. And he had just texted me or emailed me to say, I would love to go to a banding sometime. I didn't realize your library did that. And I was like, oh, yeah, come by. By the way, Brendan Wenzel did a piece of art original about our falcons. Hint, hint, hint. And then I was like, oh, shoot. Wow. I should get him. Even though, I should get a Caldecott winner. That's my life. That was exactly
You've
how I did with Dan
before.
Santat. My agent was like, who do you want to illustrate? I'm like, Dan Santat. He's like, great, go ask him. I'm like, fine. And that worked. So, and David Small was a Caldecott winner too. So I'm like, I'll just do Caldecott winners. But the problem with Caldecott winners is A, they're crazy. And B, they take a long time to do stuff, but they're worth it. And so we wrote the book.
So did you ask Matthew first? Or did you go through,
Matthew,
just said,
this is super awkward. I know we're supposed to go through the agents and stuff. But I got this manuscript. It's not cool. It's cool. It's cool, so it's not cool. You don't have to say yes, but here's the manuscript. And he liked it, but he was sort of kind of like, I don't want to commit to anything. I'm like, I get that.
Yeah.
So we went through the proper, but we were able to then go to publishers and be like, by the way, Matthew Goodell's interested. And that helped.
Nice.
That did help.
Totally.
And then we decided on, is it Chronicle? Maybe. We'll figure it out. Something like that.
You know what?
Well, there's a million years until then. Yeah.
There is a lot of stuff happening at Chronicle. There's a lot of movement
over
there.
They do beautiful books.
And I mean,
they do.
But I,
yeah, it's definitely Chronicle. For a second, I was like, is it Hyperion? It's not Hyperion. I'm pretty sure it's Chronicle. I'm like, 90% certain. No, you know what? It's not Chronicle.
Recently.
It's not Chronicle. Because it's the person who was at Chronicle. That's where I'm confused. The editor.
Because Melissa Mangrove, there's been rumors about she might be moving. She's moved from San Francisco to Portland, although I don't know if she's actually moved from Chronicle or not.
Yeah, it's
and
PRH.
Ariel Richardson also similar. There's nothing is concrete. I don't actually know, but I've heard, there's a lot of moving pieces. That's all that I know.
I would love to do a Chronicle book someday, but this is not it. Even if I'm saying it, I'm like, really? You're with Chronicle? I'm like, I think I'm actually with Knopf. I'm again with Knopf. I keep ending up with Knopf. I don't know what it is. I'll go this way and then I'm back with Knopf. I'm like, all right, I guess I'm theirs now.
Whatever gets the books done.
I put three books with them or something. Yeah. Oh, well, that's okay.
I do.
They do nice books.
I love, here's another, one more tie back. I love the thought of Betsy Bird going to these illustrators and having the illustrators go here's another author contacting me, asking me to do something with that.
I mean, you can't.
I'll work on her stuff on Saturday and Sunday.
I mean, but at the same time, I do have the list in my head of people I want to work with. I'm like, hey, went to work someday. There's two in my mind right now where I'm like, hey, I'm going to work with you someday. I don't know if you want to, but you're stuck with me.
coming.
I'm coming because I like your style. You lucky person. Yeah. So. But and the advantage of Matthew Cordell is that he can come to a banding and then we can have a photo, our author photo, taken with a baby falcon.
A baby dumb bird.
If the dumb birds have babies this year, which is a big if. Find out. Yeah.
Something that's very awesome. Relatable in those birds.
Yeah.
We're all just figuring it out.
We all thought they were brilliant parents. Now they got to learn just like the rest of us, which is kind of the point of the book. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Totally.
A lot of my writing eggs have washed down the gutters as well over the years. Yep. But anyway,
a lot of my kids too. Only one made it.
Well, thank you both, Brenna and Betsy, for my being here today. Has been an absolute blast.
Yeah. Thank you, Betsy. I appreciate you just going along with like the fun, silly. And
thank you for writing this book. It's a lovely book.
Thanks for listening this week.
Find all of our episodes and other associated links and information at linktree.com/verseshow.
Or reach out to us on Twitter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next verse.
Bye.